This is the NBC Theater. From the NBC Theater in Hollywood, a drama of extraordinary passion. The Kreutzer Sonata, based on the novel by Leo Tolstoy. This story, with its exceptionally dark look at love and womankind, came all too directly from the life of its creator. From one aspect, it might be thought of as the outpouring of an idealistic mind. From another, it could be seen as the terrifying product of a psychotic. Whichever it is certainly representative of the emotional mainsprings of Leo Tolstoy. Here now, the Kreutzer Sonata, as adapted by Richard E. Davis of NBC.
When I went back to her bedroom, the first thing that caught my eye was her light gray dress thrown on a chair and all stained black with blood. She was lying on the bed with her knees raised. There was a heavy smell of iodoform in the room. What struck me first and most of all was her swollen and bruised face, blue on part of the nose and under the eyes. There was nothing beautiful about her then, but something repulsive.
Rossia. Rossia.
No doubt she wants to confess. Shall I forgive her? Yes, she is dying and may be forgiven.
Rossia. Vasya. Is it you, Vasya?
Yes, Mom.
So, you got your way. You've killed me. But I shan't let you have the children.
She says nothing of what is to me the most important matter of all. Nothing of her guilt, her faithlessness.
Vasya. See what you've done. When you look upon your children and see my face in their living faces, I want you to remember. Oh, why did it all happen? Why?
How strange. But as I look at her now, it seems so insignificant, all that has offended me.
Oh.
Forgive me for what I've done.
Forgive? That's unimportant to forgive. Only not to die. Only not to die.
Vasya Poznishev?
Yes.
The office of the prosecutor has been informed that you are prepared to make a statement in connection with the murder of your wife. Is that correct?
Yes. Is that why you're here?
I've come to take your statement. Now then, Vasya Poznishev, I am Inspector Karkov. You can talk to me.
Won't you sit down, Inspector?
May I suggest that you try to be as complete as possible, and let us try to begin at the beginning, Poznishev.
At the trial, it will probably be said that it was caused by jealousy. Well, it was jealousy, and it wasn't jealousy.
What do you mean by that?
Well, they will decide once they have the facts that I killed her while defending my outraged honor. I believe that's the phrase they employ. I may even be acquitted, because they will think that I was trying to rehabilitate my wife's honor. That was not the case.
What then was the case, Poznishev?
Her relations with that musician had no meaning for her or me. In answer to your question, what had real meaning in the case was my swinishness. The murder was an outcome of the terrible abyss which grew between us during the years of our married life.
You were married when?
In 1879, October 12th, 10 years ago. She was the daughter of a good but impoverished family. I was a rich young bachelor.
It was a marriage of convenience?
No. No, at first we loved each other in that perverted way which is the custom of civilization. Yet the wedding preparations disgusted me. The whole business was a kind of sale. And the honeymoon was vile and, above all, intolerably dull. We were brought up in a society whose vilest lie is that love is something exalted, ideal. Of course, to the contrary, love is abominable, swinish, horrid, and shameful, and it was. And after 10 years of living with me a life where we suffered the mutual hatred of accomplices in crime who had given life to 5 children, nursed on our bitterness, she intoxicated herself by keeping busy with the children. I found direct intoxication in wine and vodka, to put up a fog to screen us from the discord. And it was at this point that he came into our lives, Trukashevsky.
Oh, Vasya, Vasya, enough wine. Your hospitality will be too much for me.
Oh, nonsense, dear Trukashevsky. You must drink up.
Huh?
What, are we not old friends, old neighbors? Oh, in our childhood, were we not almost brothers? Oh, think of all the wine, all the pleasures we have missed, Chair.
Oh, that is true, Vasya, wasn't it, Chair?
Well, then, drink up, my lad, drink up.
Well, just a little one. I want to be sober when I meet your wife, Vasya. They say she is very beautiful.
Yes, she is tall and elegant, delightful woman. She's more beautiful today than she was when we married. The years have a ripening effect now that we can have no more children.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know. It must come as a sorrow.
It does to me. Oh, the doctors didn't say we can't have any more children. They said we shouldn't have any more. But that was of no importance. Other men might have said that a woman who will have no more children is like a mare without a bridle, but...
Oh, but not you, eh, Vasya?
No. Jealousy has no part in my nature, or in hers. You like her, I'm sure. Oh, she plays the piano, you know. You might accompany her on your violin.
How delightful. I would be honored, dear Vasya.
That afternoon, Trukashevsky looked at my wife as all immoral men look at pretty women, pretending he was interested only in the music. But I knew what a bachelor's thoughts were. His meaningful gaze was exciting to her. I saw her eyes grow particularly bright, and probably as a result of my jealousy, it seemed as if an electric current had been established between them. She blushed, he blushed, she smiled, he smiled. Oh, Trukashevsky enjoyed himself tremendously. But when they finished playing and my wife excused herself to supervise the preparation of the children's dinner, he was no longer interested in staying. I brought his cloak.
Well, Vasya, this has been a most enjoyable afternoon for me.
I'm glad to hear that, Trukashevsky, and I hope you'll come again and play for my wife.
I would be delighted to return, but I think perhaps it would be wiser not to.
My wife's playing does not suit you?
To the contrary, she plays very well. The fact is, I've already asked her if we might play again when you went up to say goodnight to the children.
And what was her answer?
She said she thought I played too well for her.
Oh, nonsense. My wife is too modest. The practice will be good for her. I insist upon your coming back.
Well, if you think it would be all right...
I insist. Now, after all, even a handsome fellow like yourself doesn't have an opportunity every week to play for a beautiful woman. You come back tomorrow evening for dinner, hmm?
Very well, Vasya, I'll come. But you be sure to explain to your wife.
You may count on me. Be here tomorrow night. And don't forget to bring your violin. That was the early beginning of the end, Inspector. Oh, of course I should not have invited him to return.
How do you explain your insistence?
Don't you see? A refusal on my part to invite him to return would have been an admission that I was afraid of him. I could not admit that. It would have been too humiliating.
And yet you were afraid of this man.
Yes. Yes. Oh, but if he had not appeared, there would have been something else. All husbands who live that hypocritical family life as I did must either live dissolutely, separate, or kill themselves or their wives as I have done.
This is your explanation for inviting him to your home?
Yes. Yes. For all that I saw, or perhaps on account of it, Inspector, some force obliged me against my will to be not merely polite but amiable to him. I had to make much of him, perhaps in order not to yield to my wish to kill him then and there. So after their duet that night, after my wife had gone to bed, Trukashevsky and I had cigars, and again we drank together.
Oh, this is a marvelous vintage, Vasya.
I'm glad you like the wine, Trukashevsky. It is the best in my cellar.
Oh, you shouldn't have opened it.
Oh, why not, why not? I always say, what good is wine if one cannot drink and get drunk?
Well, there is always the bouquet.
Oh, in the first glass, perhaps. But after that, it's the separation that alcohol affords, which we all seek. Perhaps you'll understand better when you're married.
That will be a long time to wait, Vasya.
You mean a handsome fellow like yourself will not marry?
Oh, of course, someday. But right now I have no income to speak of. It takes money to support a wife.
And so you are doomed to wait before you can share life with a beautiful woman, huh?
Yes, but quite often waiting has been found to have its pleasures, Vasya.
What do you mean?
Oh, you know. Pour some more wine like a good old boy, will you, Vasya?
Huh? Oh, yes, of course. What did you mean by what you said?
Come now, Vasya. You know what a bachelor's life is like. It's not all waiting and sorrow, my friend. There is always a woman who, no strings attached, is willing to share her life with you. Vasya, you are a bachelor. You understand how it is with bachelors.
Yes, I suppose I should have known that you would have such a relationship. From Paris, too, no doubt.
Oh, no, Vasya. My finances will not permit such a permanent arrangement. But I am philosophical. You know how it is with bachelors. You understand.
Yes. At least I think I do. You have no attachments?
No, none. Trukashevsky at the moment is supremely unattached. At the moment.
I was terrified by this man whom I had brought into my home, and yet I knew, Inspector, that if he had not come, someone else would have come, or some things. Because marriage is so rotten.
Would you like a cigarette, Vasya Poznishev?
Yes. I used to smoke a great deal. I've missed it here in the prison.
Wait, I will light it for you.
Oh, thank you, Inspector. Well, he came often after that. And every time I saw them in the music room together, Trukashevsky and my wife, I felt like a bottle held upside down from which the wine does not flow because it's too full. My wine, of course, was rage.
And your wife, Poznishev, did she know about this jealousy which was consuming
her? Of course. Like all women, she had been educated for just one purpose, to inflame men. She knew well enough what she was doing to him and me. One night, after Trukashevsky had left, I was in my bedroom alone, and she was in her bedroom, which joined by a door. As usual, she was indifferent to me. I was practicing on a little piano which she kept in her bedroom. I began to feel so sorry for myself, I gave way to my rage and began to revel in it. I felt a terrible desire to beat her, kill her. But I knew that this would not do, and so to give vent to my fury, I seized two paperweights from my table and I hurled them against the door. Wild woman! That's it! Stop your playing and listen to me! And take this, your picture, my love. If you don't value the honor of the family, I don't value you. I want no part of you. I wish I could give you back your family. Completely out of my head. But do you think my wife felt sorry for me? No. Her guilt prevented that, as was proven. And later, the children's nurse came to tell me that my wife was in hysterics. The nurse said she could not speak. Her whole body was convulsed. She was not pretending. She was really ill with her guilt. Although she did not seem to understand that she was. For the next morning, she had the temerity to write me a little note.
What did it say, Vasya Poznishev?
Oh, I have it here. I've kept it with me.
My dearest Vasya, could a decent woman have any feelings for such a man as Trukashevsky, other than an appreciation of his music? Why, if you like, I am ready never to see him again. Not even on Sunday at the recital, though everyone has been invited. We plan to do the Kreutzer Sonata, the one you expressed interest in. You need only write to Trukashevsky and tell him that I am ill, and there is an end to it. Only it is unpleasant that anyone, especially he himself, should imagine that he is dangerous. I am too proud a woman to allow anyone to think that of me.
How insulting can a letter be? And yet, you know, she was not lying. She hoped by those words to evoke in herself a contempt for him and so to defend herself from him. But she did not succeed in doing so. Everything was against her, especially that accursed music. I did not write to Trukashevsky. And on Sunday, the guests assembled, the two of them played for our friends. Never seen my wife as she was that evening. Those shining eyes, the expression while she played. Then, at the conclusion of the first movement, I was struck by her melting languor, her feeble, pathetic, and blissful smile. Music does something terrible to me. It seems to carry me immediately and directly into the mental condition in which the man was who composed it. My soul merges with his soul, and together with him, I pass from one condition to another. And this Kreutzer Sonata woke in me new feelings, new possibilities of which I had been unaware, which had never been revealed to me. What these new revelations were, I could not explain to myself. But the consciousness of this new condition was joyous. My wife and Trukashevsky and I appeared in a new light. That sonata drew me into some new world where jealousy had no longer a place. Jealousy and the feeling that it evoked seemed trifles not worthy of considering. I wanted to congratulate Trukashevsky. Oh, let me shake your hand, Trukashevsky.
Thank you. Thank you, dear Vasya. Oh. Did you enjoy the music?
Oh, yes. You did something to me tonight with your playing.
That is because I had such fine support. Your wife was in magnificent form tonight.
Yes, I was very much aware of that.
You must go over and congratulate her. Her playing was truly inspired.
I will join her in a moment. What I also wanted to say to you, Trukashevsky, while we have a moment together, I'm glad the recital is tonight. Because if it had been a day later, I would have missed it.
Why is that, Vasya?
Well, I've been called to the country. I must leave tomorrow for a meeting in connection with my country properties.
Well, you don't say. I, too, am leaving Moscow.
What a coincidence. You're going back to France?
Yes. Paris is beckoning, Vasya. But I will be back in the spring, and I hope that we will be able to renew our friendship then, eh?
Yes. You're a dear friend, Trukashevsky.
Oh.
We wouldn't want to lose you. Have a fine trip.
Thank you, Vasya. The same to you. And I hope that you enjoy yourself in the country.
But in the country, I was tormented by jealousy. A cold wind cut my heart like the wind that blew the snow and ice against my window. I didn't like the idea of being away from Moscow. And then on the third day in the country, a letter came from my wife. I read hungrily and learned, among other things, that Trukashevsky had called, brought some music he had promised and offered to play again, but she had refused. Trukashevsky was still in Moscow. I did not remember his having promised any music, but perhaps he had and I had forgotten. That night I tried to sleep, but his voice would not let me.
You know how it is with bachelors, Vasya.
Oh, be still, you swine! I know what you are, unmarried, healthy. I remember how you crunched the gristle of your cutlet and how greedily your red lips clung to your glass of wine.
You know how it is with bachelors, Vasya.
At 5 o'clock in the morning, I decided I could not continue in such a state of tension. I dressed and rode into the village where I caught a morning train for Moscow. Traveling always has an exciting effect on me. And from the moment I sat down on the train, I could no longer control my imagination. With extraordinary vividness, it painted incessantly, one after another, pictures of what was going on in my absence, of how she had been false to me. I burst with indignation, anger, and a peculiar feeling of intoxication with my own humiliation. And the more I gazed on those imaginary pictures, the stronger grew my belief in their reality. The vividness with which they presented themselves to me seemed to serve as proof that what I imagined was real. Oh, true, my wife was not in her first youth. She had lost a side tooth. There was a slight puffiness about her, but it can't be helped.
You know how it is with bachelors.
In Moscow, as the cab from the train left me off at my house and drove on, I noticed that other cabs were parked in the street before the house. I was curious. You, cabbie! Why are you waiting in front of this house at such an hour?
It is not against the law to wait. Perhaps one of us will get a fare.
At this hour of the night?
But of course, my friend. If you will observe, you will notice that someone is being entertained in this house. See up there? The candles are burning in the music room, and that means one of us will take the guest home, if the guest decides to leave.
I entered the house and closed the door softly behind me. Somewhere a church bell began to toll midnight. The nurse was the only servant that remained in the house. I had nothing to fear from her. I removed my coat, out of habit, I suppose, and hung it on a peg in the hall, and then I mounted the stairs quietly and stood outside the music room, where I heard his booming laughter. They were eating and had not heard me enter. Without my knowledge, she was alone with him at night. At that thought, I was overcome by such pity for myself that I stepped into my study and sat on the sofa. She was embracing a musician because he had red lips, throwing herself on his neck. Perhaps she long ago carried on with others. In my mind, I could hear the music of the sonata they'd play together. And I felt the need to strike and destroy. I knew what I wanted to do, and I acted with precision and deliberation without losing a moment, and always with a single definite aim in view. First thing I did was take off my boots, and then in my stocking feet, I went down to the wall where the guns and daggers were hung. I took down a curved Damascus dagger, a curved one that had never been used and was very sharp. I drew it from the scabbard. Then, holding the dagger behind my back, I crept stealthily down to the room where they were eating, and I opened the door.
Vasya!
Good evening, Vasya. We've been having a little music.
I stepped towards her.
Vasya! Vasya, no, no!
My intention to bury the dagger in a spot just to the side and below her bosom. But Trukashevsky grabbed my arm. We fought across the room, struggling for the dagger.
Go of me! To your senses, Vasya! Drop the dagger!
I'm going to kill you. I'm going to kill you.
Vasya, Vasya, think what you're doing!
I threw him against the piano. I tightened my grip on the dagger. His eyes met mine, and he suddenly grew pale as a sheet to his very lips. But before I could bring the blade down, he dropped to his knees and darted under the piano and out the door of the music room. I started to run after him, but she grabbed my arm.
Hey, don't go after him, Vasya!
Let go of my arm, you...
No!
All right.
Why did you hit me? Why did you hit me?
And pulling free, I'd hit her full in the face with my elbow. She fell to the couch. I still might have run after him, but I remembered it is ridiculous to run after one's wife's lover in stocking feet. I turned back to my wife on the couch. From her swollen eyes, she looked at me as a rat does when one lifts the trap in which it has been caught. I reached for her throat.
No, no, Vasya. There has been nothing, nothing, nothing. I swear to you, Vasya.
What a firm neck it was. When people say they don't remember what they do in a fit of fury, it's a lie. I remember everything. My free hand with a dagger striking her in the side below the ribs. Momentary resistance. The plunging of the dagger into something soft. Her seizing the dagger with her bare hands but unable to hold it back.
Is that all, Vasya Poznishev? Have you finished your statement?
Yes, Inspector.
Then I will leave you now. If you think of anything you want to add, tell the warden. He will notify the office of the prosecutor. I will come right away.
Thank you. You understand, don't you, why I did it? The real aim of our existence should be to unite mankind in true love. But the passions prevent this. I did not know this when I was married. But now I realize that if we can destroy the passions, particularly those of physical love, the prophecies will be fulfilled, uniting mankind. I had to do it. She knew where I was most sensitive. And there she stabbed me.
You have heard a dramatization of the Kreutzer Sonata by Leo Tolstoy, adapted for radio by Richard E. Davis. In tonight's cast, Vasya was Whitfield Connor. His wife, Vivi Janis. Inspector Karkoff was Stanley Farrar. Drukachevsky was Paul Dubov. Your announcer, Don Stanley. Be with us again at the NBC Theater 2 weeks from tonight when we will bring you a dramatization of Daisy Miller by Henry James, and the week following that for The Man That Corrupted Hadleyburg by Mark Twain. Executive producer for the NBC Theater is Wade Arnold. The director of the NBC Theater is Andrew C. Love. This program came to you from Hollywood. Tomorrow, hear Screen Directors with Doug Fairbanks on NBC.